Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to the second half of Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. I'm your host, Joy Keys. I want to thank you so much for tuning in. I just got off the phone with wonderful writer Nadine Cojudas, Princess Noir, her newest book about the tumultuous life of Nina Simone. You want to pick up a copy. If you want to win a free copy, though, you can email me the name of the town where Nina Simone was born. Email me, SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@hotmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter.com/JoyKeys. You can become a fan on Facebook. Just look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. But right now, in an effort to try to bring more awareness to a very serious health issue, I'm going to be talking with a representative from the National Eating Disorders Association. I believe she's on the line right now, Dee Kristoff. Good morning. Can you hear me,
Dee? Good morning. Yes, I can.
Hi, thank you for calling into the show this morning.
Great. Thank you for having me, Joy.
So how did you get started working with the association?
Well, I was interested in women's health and was looking to do fundraising in a nonprofit organization in Seattle and knew someone who was working for the organization. I've now been with NIDA for nearly 10 years since we first started back in 2001.
So this organization is across the country, and I've had representatives from the organization on before. I just think it's a very important issue that people, somehow put in a box that only certain type of people suffer from eating disorders. Why don't you talk to the audience about what can make people susceptible to eating disorders?
Well, sure. Eating disorders are serious mental illnesses. They're not a lifestyle choice or the result of being pressured into something. We now know that 24 million or more Americans struggle with an eating disorder, such as anorexia, bulimia, binge eating disorder, or actually the most common one is one called EDNOS, or eating disorder not otherwise specified. And although eating disorders have historically been associated with white upper middle class females, we now know that people of all races, all income and social categories, as well as ages, abilities, sexualities, and genders are affected.
And also, yeah, genders, I'm glad you mentioned that men are affected by eating disorders, and that's definitely something that the media doesn't talk about a lot. But you can see in different areas. Now, how does it differ between women and men? What are there differences in how it comes out between men and women? Are men more leaning toward being anorexic, or are they more toward the binge eating? Is there a difference, or is it the same?
Well, that's a really good question. First of all, you did talk about susceptibility, and some of the same reasons and some of the same susceptibilities are present. For instance, there is a very strong genetic component to eating disorders, and they tend to travel in families. If someone in your family has had an eating disorder, you're 12 times more likely to struggle with it yourself. So some of the same susceptibility issues are there for men, and they can also be triggered or exacerbated by social pressures. But a couple of things that make them unique for males is, first of all, men often feel like they're doubly stigmatized. It may be difficult for a girl or a woman to admit that she has an eating disorder, but imagine being a male with a disease that's often thought of as being a girl's disease.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, another thing about males and eating disorders is that people often think they're rare in males. And less than 10 years ago, we believed that about a tenth of all eating disorders were present in males. But a recent study by Harvard University indicates that the prevalence rate in males might be more like a quarter of all eating disorders.
That's a much larger grouping than we initially thought. So, that's why I try to do these programs, because I think, I'm as a parent, one, just trying to stay connected with your child, but sometimes later in life that things can come about in terms of the binge eating. Now, why do people binge eat? My understanding of, you know, trying to ease pain in their life, talk to us about that. What is the trigger there? A traumatic event, getting laid off a job? You know, talk about the binge eating.
Some of those can be triggers for an eating disorder. But once again, eating disorders are not all about the food. This is not necessarily a way to lose weight. Rather, people use eating disorders or use food as a way to suppress emotions or to
mm-hmm.
deal with issues that may be much too difficult or overwhelming for them. Some people, you know, go some other route, but if you have a susceptibility for an eating disorder, that might be the way that you would, you know, that you would deal with difficult problems in your life. Now, there can be traumatic events that can trigger an eating disorder, but I just want to be real clear that an eating disorder is not anyone's fault, and the family is not to blame for an eating disorder. Like I said, these are mental and medical illnesses that are not chosen by anyone or caused by a single factor. They're very complex diseases, and usually there's more than one thing going into the eating disorder. The other interesting thing about it is that they rarely travel alone. Usually when someone has an eating disorder, they may be accompanied by anxiety, depression,
mm-hmm.
obsessive-compulsive disorder, alcohol and drug abuse. So there are clusters of behaviors that eating disorders are a part of that are really brain illnesses.
Well, one of the things I'm reading from the Mayo Clinic website talks about diagnosing people with binge eating. Binge eating disorders isn't yet officially classified as a mental disorder, and not all experts agree on whether or not it should be. But binge eating is similar to bulimia nervosa, another eating disorder, and some experts think it may be a form of bulimia. But unlike people with bulimia who try to rid themselves of the extra calories after a binge through vomiting, exercise, or other means, people with binge eating disorder don't attempt to purge themselves of the extra calories they consume. So it is slightly different, and it's funny how in the medical community people are battling over, you know, what to label it. I mean, but I think one of the issues is how to treat it. So what are some of the things that people can do to get help for dealing with eating disorders?
Well, first of all, there sometimes can be barriers to treatment due to the lack of insurance coverage, and that's one thing that my organization is working to improve, and we have had some recent gains. But you should absolutely seek treatment. All eating disorders are serious and can be fatal, and it does require professional help. However, you know, recovery is possible, and there is help out there. Usually, treatment for eating disorders, whether it's binge eating disorder, bulimia, anorexia, or EDNOS, eating disorder not otherwise specified, requires a treatment team. Because it's a multifaceted disease, often you'll have a team that includes a medical doctor, a therapist who's a psychologist or psychiatrist of some sort, a nutritionist, and sometimes even art therapy or some other music therapy. But it's best to seek professional help for an eating disorder because it's not something you can stop easily. It's not just a diet that you can, you know, start on Monday and end on Friday.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I wanted to bring up, wonderful work that your organization does, is the support for the caregivers, the parents and family and friends network. And you have a newsletter there. Talk to the audience about the supports that you have for the caregivers.
Thank you for mentioning that, because eating disorders are family illnesses and it affects everyone in the family. So we have a free group that we call Parent Family Friend Network, or the PFN, in which we have people who are looking for help or who have experienced eating disorders in their own families and are willing to mentor each other. In fact, there's a program within our Parent Family and Friend Network called the NIDA Navigators. This is pretty new. It's less than a year old. But we have people who are trained, people who have experienced an eating disorder themselves and are in significant recovery or have had a family member, and they can say, well, I know what it's like to try to find a treatment team, or what did you do when your child had to go off to college? And these are things that sometimes the medical team or a treatment team, you know, they'll do their best and they can sometimes help, but often people just want to talk to someone who's gone through this like they have.
Yeah. Somebody who understands them. I mean, sometimes doctors, no matter what illness you're dealing with, can be kind of standoffish, a little removed. I think it does help to have someone who can be empathetic to your situation.
Right.
The email, if people, it says on your website, if you'd like to connect with a PFN member, email us at pffnetwork@mynada.org, and that's pffnetwork@mynada.org. You can go to their website. It's posted here on my Blog Talk radio page and also on the Facebook page to connect with the organization. Now, you have a National Eating Disorders Awareness Week is coming up February 20th. Talk to me about some of the things, events and programs that are going to be happening.
Yes, National Eating Disorders Awareness Week is very exciting. It's 1 week, and it's, like you said, February 20th to 26th. And if you want to find out if there are events in your own community, you can go to our website at www.myneda.org, and you can do a search and find out what events are happening. But they can include anything from, we ask that people do just one thing to raise awareness during National Eating Disorders Awareness Week. So it could be something as simple as leafleting or passing out materials, doing a speech at school about eating disorders, or it could be something far more exciting. There are groups that do that do plays that are about eating disorders.
Well, you're doing a public service announcement contest.
Yes,
also,
we
yes?
are.
That Talk about
is
that
right. We are looking for people to design a 30-second public service announcement that's a video and to put it on YouTube, and we will. The deadline for that is February 20th, which is the first day of National Eating Disorders Awareness Week, and the winner of the video contest will win a trip to New York where we'll play the PSA at our fundraising benefit dinner in New York, and they'll get to be present. We'll pay for plane tickets and accommodations and tickets to the event, and we'll play it on our website.
That's a wonderful opportunity. Not only are they, being activists, but then they get recognized for their activism. I mean, you could be a young person, you could be an old person, whatever you want to say.
Right.
But I think it doesn't matter. It's just that you're bringing awareness to this very serious mental health issue. Now, one of the other things, not only are you helping the individuals who have the eating disorders, the caregivers, but you're also supporting the scientists with research grants, young investigator grants. Tell us about that a little bit.
Yes, we have done some young investigator research grants in the past. The amount of funding for eating disorders is abysmal. More people suffer from eating disorders than Alzheimer's disease, and it's more difficult to treat than schizophrenia. And yet the amount of federal funding that's available for eating disorders is, you know, less than a tenth of what's available for those diseases. So one of the things that we did in past years was that we were able to raise enough funds to do small research grants of $5,000 or $10,000. But that would give young researchers the access to get some initial data that in some instances made them eligible for those federal funds, much bigger grants later on.
Yeah, in 2010 you were awarded three research grants. One of them, the University of Chicago, reduced expressed emotion in parents of adolescents with anorexia nervosa. Another one in Florida, binge-induced gene changes in reward-related brain areas. And the third one they don't say the area here, but there was a neuropsychiatric research institute, physical activity and ecological momentary assessment of anorexia nervosa, a pilot study. So those are some wonderful subjects that need to be delved into. And as you mentioned, there's just not a lot of money out there. People are not willing to give or don't think it's important. But as you mentioned, people are dying. This is not one of those diseases, per se, that one is very easy to get rid of. Or illnesses to get rid of in the sense of it's ongoing throughout the person's life, even if they maybe aren't suffering at a particular moment, but it's still lingering within them. It needs to be paid attention to. So if you're listening to the show today, please go to the website, NADA's website, and learn about how you can become an activist, either by creating a PSA, passing out flyers, asking people at your workplace or your school to put up posters. There's lots of information and resources about what you can do. There's also toolkits, an educator toolkit, a parent toolkit, and a coach and athletic trainer. Now, that's an interesting issue, too, in sports. A lot of girls, like I remember it was in the news a lot with gymnastics and how the girls and eating. Talk about that. And also fashion and modeling is a big issue.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we put together the toolkits because we knew that there were certain groups of people who needed to have information at hand and that was specifically targeted towards them. And our new toolkit is the coach and athletic trainer toolkit because we had heard from athletes themselves and people who had suffered from eating disorders that there's a lot of pressure. Now, gymnastics is one area where you do hear about it, as well as figure skating, because part of what the athletes are judged on is their appearance. So if they don't look like the typical a figure skater, then they may not be judged as highly for it in gymnastics as well. However, it's not limited to the sports where appearance is one of the factors that you're judged on, because anytime you have intense pressure to achieve, some people will, you know, have a natural susceptibility to an eating disorder, and that climate all by itself can make them vulnerable. And that, again, that doesn't mean it's the coach's fault or the fault of the sport either, but we do know that in those groups, that's a place where it's very common. So we do have an athletic coach and athletic trainer toolkit for those groups and people who care to let their schools know, or if you're an athletic trainer yourself. And it includes stories about the experiences of individuals who have gone through an eating disorder. We give some information about, you know, how to handle that in a group. And one of the things that you do, whether you're looking at one of our resources online or calling our national toll-free helpline, is that we can help you navigate this. What we like to do is to help people find treatment and to figure out how kinds of treatment, or even give advice on how to talk to a friend who you think might have an eating disorder. And
I think that's one of the sticky issues. Like as a friend, you know you don't want to lose your friendship. You don't want to completely sometimes. Up like, hey, I know that you were doing this, because then you don't. If the person might run away, so that's an important issue as a friend trying to ease into the conversation, or maybe that's a point where somebody can give them a pamphlet and just say, hey, look, I found this interesting information. I wanted to read something. This is from a 2006 article on CNN. The world's first ban on overly thin models at a top-level fashion show in Madrid has caused an outrage among modeling agencies and raised the prospect of restrictions at other venues. Madrid's Fashion Week has turned away underweight models after protests that girls and young women were trying to copy their real thin looks and developing eating disorders. So modeling industry is just a haven. Why is it? I mean, again, we say that it's a mental health disorder. So are you saying that there are a lot of models with mental health disorders because eating disorders are a mental health issue? Talk to me about that.
Well, not all models have eating disorders, but unfortunately, models typically are people who have a physique that 3% or less of the population is even capable of achieving, even with severe dieting. So someone is chosen because of their unique body size and shape, and they have pressures themselves also to be thin and even thinner than what seems natural. And so it is very hard. But it's not safe to assume that because someone's thin that they have an eating disorder, or that eating disorders only exist in people. As you mentioned, you know, binge eating disorder is a new diagnosis that will be in the upcoming diagnostic and statistical manual of mental illnesses. Mm. But right now it's in there just for further research. But binge eating disorder and eating disorder not otherwise specified, which is a combination of the different symptoms of various eating disorders, whether it's anorexia, bulimia, or binge eating disorder, these are actually more common than anorexia or bulimia. Binge eating disorder and EDNOS are both more common than anorexia or bulimia.
So now when people come to your website, I just wanted to mention again about the website, nationaleatingdisorders.org. There's some wonderful resources, information about events. There's a NADA walk. Talk to me about the NADA walk, registering for walking.
Well, the NADA walks are terrific. A lot of times people go to a NADA walk and they've never had seen more than a couple of people in a room before who were even willing to talk about an eating disorder. And here you have an entire group of people willing to be seen publicly and to say they care about this disease. But it's fabulous, too, because it's pretty simple to put on. And we have manuals that you can purchase for just $15 to learn how to put on your own walk. And we started these less than 2 years ago and have them happening all over the country now.
So like you said, that's just an easy way to get involved. I mean, people are saying, well, I don't have time, I don't have the energy. I mean, there's just some easy things, like we mentioned, putting up posters, trying to do the video PSA. They have a contest where you can win a trip to New York. Now there's the walk that you – so there's so many opportunities to get involved, to make people aware of eating disorders, and that it can be a death sentence for certain individuals, but that their lives can be saved if intervention is done at a certain point. Also, another important point that it's not the family's fault, it's not the teacher's fault. But, Dee, I do want to disagree with you a little bit. In some cases, it can be the family or a particular family member. Maybe if a parent was extremely harsh on a child as they were growing up, or a coach, you know, constantly criticizing. I mean, I think those things can add or possibly trigger the child or adolescent to go into the eating disorder. So I have to disagree that it's not the parents' fault. I mean, I think in a positive, healthy family situation, yes, it's not the parents' fault. But other times people have some horrible parents or coaches that are constantly attacking them. You know, what do you feel about that?
I'm not going to agree with you 100% here, because what we know about eating disorders is that there are some genetic vulnerabilities, and you can have someone in one family, have someone make one comment about someone's weight, and that may help to trigger an underlying disorder that's already there, and someone else's family it may not. But you know what the biggest factor is, other than the genetic susceptibility, is dieting. Dieting is common. We see that, and dieting, if you want to say something causes an eating disorder besides the genetic susceptibility, the National Institute of Mental Health says that 35% of dieters will develop an eating disorder. Dieting is one of the biggest indicators of an eating disorder, and yet one person can diet and stop the diet and be fine, and another person can't control it. Right.
Definitely. So let's talk about the susceptibility and different ethnicities. In terms of African-American women, there was many articles a couple years back about young black girls coming on the – I guess I would say it's more attention given to young black women dealing with eating disorders. In the African-American community, Latino community, you might have a more shapely view of beauty, but they were still susceptible. Talk to me a little bit about African-Americans, Latino young women, and eating disorders.
Sure. Well, one thing is that there's a lot more research on upper-middle-class white females and eating disorders. So, of course, the data that's going to be collected is reflective of that population a little more. Historically, we've thought that they were far more present in white females. This is a rich white girl's disease, right? And we found more recently that that's absolutely not the case. And in fact, the prevalence of eating disorders, the exception of anorexia, the prevalence of eating disorders is similar throughout race and ethnicity, whether it's non-Hispanic whites, the Hispanic community, African Americans, and even the Native American community. When you compare purging and binge eating disorder and diagnoses of eating disorder, they're similar in whites and Native Americans and African Americans. The only difference is we do find that there is a little bit more incidence of anorexia in whites. And
so,
I think you're right that there's...
Go ahead.
I think you're right that there's also a perception that a more curvaceous body is desirable or acceptable in an African-American or Latino community, but that's changing. One of the things that we're seeing is that as, you know, more African-Americans and Latinos want to look like what is considered mainstream, that cultural process is adding to pressures.
Definitely. I think the magazines, even in Essence, Ebony, the model is thin. I mean, to be a model, you have to be like a size 4 or 2. So these images are also in African-American magazines. Some are a little curvy, but they do nowadays have another section in the magazine. I know Essence does like a more full-figured model. I forgot her name, Takora. I think she's in there a lot. To show women who are wearing a size above a 12, say a 14 or 16, and that they can be beautiful also. So I think that helps balance, because I think the average size of an American woman is like a 12 or 14. And then when you look at a model who's a 2 or 4, that's like 6 sizes, or at least almost, if you want to put it into pounds, probably like 60, 70 pounds thinner than the average woman walking around. It's no wonder that people are thinking less of themselves or not feeling proud about who they are. Now, I'm a proponent of being healthy. Whatever your weight, being healthy. Make sure your blood pressure's in check, that you don't develop diabetes. You know, things that you can help prevent. If you're healthy but you're full figure, you know what, more power to you, keep it going. But if you're overweight and you're unhealthy, that's where the problem becomes. Or if you're underweight, for whatever reasons, if it's an eating disorder or anything else, maybe it's just pressure, you're not really taking enough time for yourself. It's the issue of trying to keep balance in your life. So
that's right.
I don't, you know, that's an important issue. But the National Eating Disorders Organization can help you and your family and your friends. If you're a friend listening to the show, please reach out to NADA. They have toolkits and resources and pamphlets to help you. Try to reach out to your friend or your sister or your coworker, whoever it is, or your brother. Again, I want to bring up the point that men and boys, so it doesn't stop at adolescents. I will say that again, men also suffer from eating disorders, and there's a whole section on the website talking about that. So please take a moment to look on the website. I want to thank you, Dee, for coming on the show today.
Oh, thank you. And if I could just mention, our national toll-free helpline number is 1-800-931-2237, and it's staffed 40 hours a week, Monday through Friday, and people are very happy to answer your questions and to give you some ideas about how you might seek out treatment and recovery.
Well, thank you so much for providing that number. And again, please check out their website, nationaleatingdisorders.org. Thank you, Dee, so much for coming on the show. You have a wonderful Saturday, okay?
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. Thank you, everybody, for listening to the second half of Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes. Just got off the phone with Dee Kristoff from the National Eating Disorders Association. Please take a moment to go to their website, nationaleatingdisorders.org, and try to find out how you can become an activist, maybe putting up a poster, passing out a flyer, doing a walk, or even better yet, creating a video public service announcement, and maybe you can win a free trip to New York. I hope you have a wonderful Saturday and a wonderful week. I will be going to New York City Fashion Week on Monday, so I hope to have some pictures I'll try to put up on the fan page. But you can follow me on twitter.com/JoyKeyes. You can become a fan on Facebook. Just look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes. Also, tune in next Saturday, February 19th, a wonderful researcher, Dr. Khalil Gibran Muhammad, at 11 a.m. He is going to be the new director of the Schomburg Center in New York City. And then at 11:30, a singer, Ayo, on the show at 11:30, then Billboard hits in France, Germany, all over the globe. So you want to tune in to listen to her music, ask questions, call in 646-929-0368 is the call-in number. Again, you can follow me on twitter.com/JoyKeyes. You can become a fan on Facebook. Just look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes. Also, you can email me, SaturdaysWithJoyKeyes@hotmail.com. If you have any questions, concerns, comments, please feel free to email me. You have a wonderful Saturday.
You know that the ice cream scoop can make a child smile, and that by slowing us down, the traffic light can keep us going. You know that the lawnmower makes life easier, that the blood bank makes life possible. But did you know all these ideas came from the minds of African Americans? Support the United Negro College Fund, because a mind is a terrible thing to waste. Visit uncf.org or call 1-800-332-UNCF. Brought to you by UNCF and the Ad Council.